Blog Talk Radio.
Ray and Tay today. Yes, Sports Radio's on. Talking sports with friends, and you know we got it on. From the NFL to the NBA, MLB and college hoops do it all day. College football, we know who's number one. Understand, on the phones, you know we get it done. So call in 718-664-9098 and we'll give you more.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and thank you for joining us this Friday evening, talking some sports with friends. Like the E-Complete rhyme said, give us a call, 718-664-9098. Hit us up with your questions at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out a lot of great poll questions and hot topics at rayandtaytoday.com. We're very interactive. Tweet at us, Facebook us. We're everywhere, Ray. We got NBA, college hoops, a segment. Let's start off with a little bit of off-the-field stuff. I guess really one of the main things, you know, separate from the NBA, is really much to do about nothing. Chris Paul, rookie referee that happens to be a woman. I think it's more about the fact that the Clippers got spanked on national television and they lead the NBA in technical fouls, second is the Phoenix Suns. Do you make anything of this? I mean, I think it's a reach to try to say he's sexist because of the pronoun her.
Yeah, look, it's ironic that it happens to Chris Paul, who's the player rep. I think you're right. I think he's frustrated. I think he would have blown up against any ref, and it's just especially any rookie ref, because you know how the players and they don't really love rookie refs. So it's unfortunate. I don't think there's malice. I don't know Chris Paul, right? We don't know him, but we don't think there's anything particularly, you know, in his history that shows that he's you know, sexist or doesn't have respect for, you know, a female ref. Maybe he just doesn't have respect for rookie refs, which is legit. You know, a lot of players have that. So
he said is true. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong, right?
Well, you don't have the whole picture, though. You don't know if he's been egging her on all game, right? Maybe in that particular moment, what he said was not right, but maybe he was saying stuff all game previous. That's why you really have to, if you want to do an investigation, you bring them both in, they make a statement, yeah, and then you just make a decision and you move on. You're right, though. If what he said was just that commentary isn't worthy of getting a technical. So,
yeah.
But again, put it in context. He could have been grading on her all game.
Very true, very true. So fascinating when we look sort of back and, you know, continuing to just look off the field. You and I said it last year, and we threw out the question, is Tiger Woods done? He drops out of, withdraws from Torrey Pines. You know, the fog rolls in, he warms up, gets ready to tee off in 10 minutes, and the fog comes again, hour and a half. Now, granted, that can mess anybody up, especially someone who's had his medical history. But I got a weird feeling that Tiger is no longer going to be El Tigre, and I'd be shocked if he wins two tournaments, not even majors, two tournaments the whole season. I don't think we're going to see great Tiger ever again.
Ever again. So if he's four behind Jack, will he ever catch Jack?
Well, over the next 5 to 6 years, and you know golf, they can still be productive in their late 40s to fit, you know, even to 50. If he's maintained some sort of health, he's still got strength. I think it's really about his mental. So, yeah, he could do it, but it might be, like, really crawling to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be a season where he wins two.
Isn't it funny, though, that the guy who was considered to be the mentally the strongest and physically fittest, because he brought physical golf, physicality, I guess, and working out and keeping your body in shape to golf. Because you look at these cats like, the walrus, Craig Stadler, and these other golfers, they never would do anything like what Tiger's doing. So it's ironic that now people are questioning Tiger's physical ability to bounce back and his mental toughness. So
it's hard to believe that it's even a conversation, right? I mean, it is shocking, but it's also easy for media or anybody to sort of kick a man when he's down, because the reality is, in all sports, you know, availability is the best ability or whatever. You have to be healthy, and I don't care if you're playing hockey, golf, tennis, you know, whatever it is, football, and we'll talk about that in a minute with the Seahawks. If you're not healthy, you could go out there like a warrior and still try, but
not
it doesn't
only that,
mean you have 100%.
No, you're 100% right, and not only that, but it depends on your game, right? There are people that have that silky smooth game that can not be healthy and still get away with it, but Tiger is so violent when he strikes the ball, and Tiger puts so much stress and torque on his back and his knees just because he's been such a prolific golfer, and all that strength has allowed him to be, you know, long off the drive, and you have to change your game, change your swing. Something's got to change, right? He's not that silky smooth. It's like Earl, you know, we kept coming back to Earl Campbell or some big bruiser back, you know. Maybe they can't change their game, right? They can't just become a finesse back. And so I think something's got to change in Tiger's game, but you got to think, if somebody can make a change, it's Tiger, the guy who has the discipline. He works out. He's a student of the game. So that's why I'm not writing Tiger off just yet, but hey,
right.
You know.
But you
got to
be shocked. Still got to be shocked, though, Ray. Even at the Phoenix Open, he didn't play well, and he said he felt good, and his chip shots were hard. He was chipping horrible. I mean, he was terrible. Just
terrible.
So continuing off the field, we'll leave El Tigre alone. Couple of news and notes with the, you know, the Super Bowl. Obviously, those guys got fined for the fight, Gronk and Bennett and a couple of the football players. No big deal. But three or really four of the LOB, not starting LOB, but four out of the five main guys are having off-season surgery. Cam Chancellor was playing with a torn MCL, which is just amazing in itself. I mean, you even have guys like Brian Dawkins and other athletes like, what? That's incredible. Then Tommy John, we spoke about Sherman, you know, congrats to him for his little son. And then Earl Thomas, a torn labrum in the shoulder, and Lane, a broken arm. I mean, what does it say about them, obviously, in the Super Bowl, but then getting ready for next season, you know, for training camp? You think everybody will be back?
Look, I think these injuries seem like you can bounce back from them, right? Richard Sherman's elbow, Tommy John surgery. Well, he's not throwing any pitches. I don't know if it affects your ability to catch, but he should be fine, I think. Earl Thomas should be okay. Cam Chancellor with the MCL, you know what? As long as it's not an ACL, people tend to bounce back from the MCL better. The kid that broke his arm also.
That was bad, Lane.
The nickel, Lane, the nickel corner. So he should be all right. I think they'll be fine. You do tip your hat, though, and again, this is, you know, when we talk about football players, we talk about how they. We talk about how they hold out and how they don't honor their contracts and this and that. And then you say, well, wait a minute. These guys need to get hazard pay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're paying, playing completely broken up. And granted, it's the Super Bowl and everybody else, most everybody else would do it as well. But tip your hat to these guys, man. And again, I don't want to know what they did in the locker room if they got shot up with, with all kinds of drugs, painkillers, cortisone.
It's, you know, and it's sad, but the reality is, it's like you said, they are warriors, hazard pay, the whole thing. And look, you just wish them well, because I gotta believe. Now, look, they're probably gonna lose Maxwell. I don't think they'll be able to keep him, and that's. He's the number one corner on the free agent market, and obviously Ray and Tay will get heavy into that. But, you know, pretty much most of this team will probably come back. You know, they're going to pay Wilson, give Lynch a little bump up, and Bobby Wagner. But that's the one, and also Carpenter, the guard. You know, they got to keep Wagner and Carpenter, but they're going to probably lose Maxwell, because you got to believe the Jets and all these other teams are going to be like, yeah, we want a great cornerback. who can play in any system, you know?
Right. Well, just like they lost Browner, though, they're able to bounce back from that.
No, true. So a couple of things I wanted to throw your way real quick before we get to the NBA. Warm your heart, Ken Norton Jr. was hired as the defensive coordinator for the Oakland Raiders, the ex-49er.
Okay.
Isn't that great? I thought that was pretty awesome. That's
good for him. That's our boy from back in the days. Cowboys, Niners, he and Charles Haley.
Yeah, no, definitely. And if, listen, you talk about Haley. He kind of ripped your boy Brady. You know, in an interview about him being the Hall of Fame, said, "Oh, no way, he's Montana," and kind of said his four Super Bowls were tainted. So, I don't know what to say about that. Everybody's going to have their own opinions. I can't, you know, that's for the guys in the trenches, and we didn't play in the trenches. So, you know, if it does come out, though, you know, people are going to rip him. But people don't need anything to come out because they feel like the investigation for Deflategate's a sham anyway. So, I don't know. The guy's still great, you know. He's still great. So, and then what do you think about Sue? And Ndamukong Suh, who might not go back with the Lions, says he'd like to suit up for the Seattle Seahawks. Wow.
Wow. Could that be the rich getting richer? I mean, that's crazy. Most guys actually, after the teams have found success, I mean, most guys probably want to go to a team and be the savior and the hero. So it's interesting that he wants to join them, the almost two-time defending champs. I don't know. That one was hard to understand. He went to Nebraska, so I don't think he's got any roots in the
maybe
Northwest.
Maybe it's just the way they play, or
maybe it's Pete Carroll.
You know? Yeah, Pete Carroll. Yeah. So let's really, before we get to NBA, let's talk about what happened on Wednesday, because it's becoming a very weird thing, and maybe it's a phenomenon, and maybe it's not, that 17 and 18-year-old kids are having press conferences on national television, on ESPNU, for signing day. And let's talk about, you know, who, you know, obviously the top 10, 11 schools, but what are your thoughts about it in general? I mean, I don't think bad about it, but they probably do need to have an early signing period so it's not so chaotic. I don't know. What are your thoughts about the whole thing? It's kind of weird to me, but I guess it is what it is, right?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know how much of it is college sports itself doing it or how much of it is just ESPN. Ready to cash in. And, you know, we love ESPN, but they're so ready to cash in on college sports that it's gone to the high school level, to the signing day. I mean, that's just crazy. And these guys having press conferences at their high schools. And you know what? Good for them. If it's their time in the sun, good for them. I mean, how many, you know,
they
top
so
100
hard.
Athletes, you know, fizzle out? So if they can get some love, why not? You can be sure that their coaches are going to start, you know, working them on the field. So enjoy it while it lasts. But Alabama, let's talk about some schools, though. Alabama, what is it, fourth year in a row?
Number one, yeah.
That they have the top recruiting class. I mean,
so there's different lists. There's different lists, but real quick. So Bama's one. I see LSU two, Florida State three. Number four, Texas A&M, then Tennessee. So the SEC is just all up there. Florida, six. Ohio State, seven. Auburn, eight, who got the number one recruit. Georgia, nine, who might get a kid, who might not, didn't send in this thing to UCLA, even though he fit it on TV. And then 10, Miami, and they said UCLA is right there at 11. So I don't know. You were going to say it, so talk about it. The SEC dominance, they said out of the ESPN 300, I think over 160 or 170 players were from or going to SEC schools. That's amazing.
It really is. And you know what? I mean, the defending national champs, Ohio State, you know, you would figure that they move up in the rankings. And Michigan goes and signs Harbaugh, so they're more attractive. You know, some traditional powers.
You'll see him do well next year.
Yeah,
he didn't have to recruit.
Maybe a little late in the recruiting season. But I guess what I'm saying is you've got here and there some teams that, you know, did okay. Florida State, as we said, top, you know, top three recruiting class. But ultimately, it's almost like Kentucky basketball. If you are a stud and you have pro aspirations and you want to play with other studs, you go to the SEC. So it really is a case of the rich getting richer, and it's like they breed football players in the Southeast. And, you know, it's funny because these SEC schools, a lot of times, most of their recruits are just local kids. Just local kids, you know, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, all
but
the way to the
of
Carolinas.
To the Southeast and to the West. So they said that that's, you know, why this phenomenon sort of is. I mean, Florida, Texas, you know, all these schools.
Well, they play football all year round, so that helps to get that other, you know, to get that spring football season in. But it's just amazing that the SEC, I mean, and how do you break that? I guess it helps that Ohio State won a national championship, right? And because we both thought Alabama would run it again. But this cycle.
Well, these other schools are trying. Like, I think, look, obviously in the top 15 or 20, you know, Clemson from the ACC had a good class. UCLA and USC did good. You know, Snoop's son, number 14th ranked wide receiver, Cordell Brodus, Snoop Dogg's son, went to UCLA instead of USC, his father's favorite school. So I thought that was cool. And
what do you think?
Like
he said, I'm trading in my boxers. USC boxers to UCLA boxers.
But it's weird because, honestly, I didn't hear too much about Maryland, Penn State, Rutgers, Michigan State, Indiana, the Big Ten. I didn't hear too much about Big Ten schools getting, you know, top, you know, I guess that top 20, you know, talent. So I guess it'll be fascinating. Notre Dame did pretty well again and did pretty good. So, look, you know, what's so amazing, right? We talked about on Super Bowl Sunday, most of those guys were not five stars. So you still got to go out there and do it. And for kids who weren't ranked or were ranked two or three stars and they're not four or five stars, listen, you got an opportunity to still make it and make it to the Super Bowl and to the NFL. So you just got to work. You just got to work, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? Like I said, this gives the kids a little time in the sun and they get their little stroke of their ego. But a lot of these kids now come in for spring practice and quickly they're going to put the pads on and coaches are going to work them. So, you know, get all your fun in now because you're about to become a college student and a student athlete. And those coaches in those big Division I schools, those SEC schools, they're going to work you hard.
Yeah, no, definitely with that. So, you want to hoop it up? Oh, we forgot about Adrian Peterson. It looks like Goodell, they got a fair hearing. And I guess it looks like he'll be reinstated or active again. Hopefully, I don't know if it will be with the Vikings or not, but for I think it's April 15th. So I don't know. Look, we'll get into the NFL free agency. It's going to be fascinating with Peterson, Lynch, DeMarco Murray, and, you know, what happens with all the running backs and then even Gordon and Gurley in the draft and, you know, Amir Abdullah, where these running backs go. Because now you're starting to see the running game is sort of very, very important again in football, which is very fascinating. So
yeah, it's funny because now that Beast Mode, you know, almost won himself another title, New England does things differently, right? They're just a different animal. But, you know, we kept saying a running game is important. Think about Andrew Luck, how much he would like a running game. Now, Boone Heron is a young kid. Maybe he'll develop. But playing from ahead, playing ball control, playing, unless you run a West Coast offense, a high efficiency, 70% completion, you know, running the ball is not just a luxury. It helps with time of possession. It helps your defense. It helps contain, maintain momentum. There's nothing like, you know, it's nice to throw an 80-yard bomb. Don't get me wrong. You know, you'll get your 7 points and you'll be happy. But a 13-play drive for 80 yards is so much more disheartening to the other team. You imposed your will on them. And so running the ball is key.
Yeah. You're right. You're definitely right about that. So, you ready to talk some hoops, man?
We can talk college and pros.
Let's hoop it up with the pros first. a couple things I wanted to ask you. Kevin Durant's coming back tonight. I guess, just starting with the Western Conference, obviously, you know, Golden State in a, you know, tight game. I think it's 36 all with the Hawks tonight and the two best teams in the NBA. But Do you think Phoenix and the Pelicans, at the bottom half of the Western Conference, do you think they sort of dropped the ball and didn't take enough of a lead and an advantage of all of OKC's injuries? And I think about that because of Durant coming back tonight, because of them only being a couple games out. Obviously, that big win the other night when Westbrook dropped 45-6-6, Ray. And, you know, they're playing the Pelicans tonight, OKC. They're already leading 14-6, but which is a huge game for them. They need to beat New Orleans, which they beat them earlier this week. So then there's no, you know, for tiebreakers, if they win this, they'll be tied 2-2 with them. But what do you think about Phoenix and the Pelicans sort of allowing OKC to stay around?
No, you're on to something big, because any team that has Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant is probably going to beat your team, especially if you're not a top three team in either conference. That's what they have, either of them. And if they have both of them and they're healthy, they're a top, you know, three or four team in the NBA, even with, you know, some question marks with Lamb and Ibaka and Adams. And, you know, the role players need to step up a little bit more, and maybe they get more out of Deion Waiters. So, yes, they dropped the ball, and because of that, they won't make the playoffs. I got to think that Phoenix right now has 23 losses, New Orleans has 23 losses, and Oklahoma City has 24 losses. At this point, what is that, 50 games into the season almost, 49 games into the season, You need to have maybe four or five games in a loss column ahead of Oklahoma City. So I have no doubt that Oklahoma City is going to catch them. They're six in a loss column behind Dallas and San Antonio, so they may catch them, one of those two, if one of those two falter, but I can't see Phoenix or New Orleans holding them off, holding off Oklahoma City.
It's a shame.
You needed to put the pedal to the metal.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, Phoenix, they with their three-guard offense, I have a funny feeling before the deadline, and Alex Lem just got hurt. He'll be out for, you know, till the All-Star break or after the All-Star break, but he'll be okay with the ankle. But I think Phoenix, in hopes to keep Goran Dragic, I think they're going to, you know, right after the All-Star break, the deadline I think is the 19th or so, they're going to try. I think they might wind up trading Isaiah Thomas to a team, and, you know, him being a very nice piece. He's very talented, you know, can start at the point or be, you know, that great third guard coming off the bench. But I honestly think that both these teams – now, look, the Pelicans, they just got Eric Gordon back. Anthony Davis, your main man, has been in and out of the lineup too, not as much as Durant or Westbrook, but he's had a couple of little injuries. But I just don't think the Pelicans have quite enough, you know, when they're matched up to OKC. But you never know. It'll be fascinating. But you're right. I think the Thunder. And can you imagine, Ray, the first round in the West, the Warriors playing the Thunder. And the Thunder just, you know, nobody would be shocked if the Thunder beat them in the first round.
No. They're an unusual eight seed. If they make the eight seed, that's going to be one of those where, you know, a handful of eight seeds have beaten number one seeds, right? Memphis did it to San Antonio. The Golden State Warriors did it. And, of course,
that
Denver, the Kemba Mutombo's team.
They did it to
Seattle. So there's a handful of eight beating ones. But if this eight beats this one, that's not even – nobody even cares. Meaning nobody would think of anything. Yeah.
And ironically, though, you know what's so
barely
funny?
Barely an upset.
Any matchup in the West this year – 3-6, 2-7-4, I mean, it's a toss-up. I don't even think the seeding really matters in the West because, what, you don't think the Spurs can beat Memphis or Portland if in the 7-2
sure.
matchup? You know? So, like, whatever winds up working out, it's going to be fascinating. I wonder what you think, though, about Howard. You know, him, you know, having his little procedure done. Do you think this will hurt them for seeding, but also hurt Harden for MVP? Is everybody just so in love with Steph Curry and the Warriors that it almost doesn't matter what Harden does to get MVP this year?
No,
or will LeBron
I think people have LeBron fatigue. So even though they've won a lot, what if they won the last 10 in a row, right? Or 12 in a row?
11, I think. 11 or 12, yeah.
12. I think they won their last 12 in a row, which, again, I kept telling everybody, relax, Cleveland will be fine. Cleveland will be fine. You know, when you have Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James, and the other team doesn't, you'll be all right. They just need to get it together. They got a couple athletes. They made a trade.
Well,
they shook it up.
The trades really helped. I mean, Mozgov's playing great. And then when you add Shumpert
Tim
and
can I get a Tim O'Fay? Can I get a Tim O'Fay?
Got to get a Tim O'Fay. Remember, the Nuggets, they wouldn't make that trade for Melo if they didn't throw Tim O'Fay in there. So, you know, it's the kid's got talent. And to be honest, I didn't want the Knicks to trade him either. I thought the kid had potential, and he's actually playing pretty darn good. The Knicks could use him.
It's
doing well.
It's funny because Cleveland is doing a little late, but they're getting it together. But back to Harden, though, I actually think Howard being down makes a better case for Harden for MVP, just because he's, you know, talking about doing more with less. You know, who else is on the Houston Rockets? And right now I think they'll slip a little bit, but right now they're third place in the West. They're 6-3 behind Golden State, but you could argue Golden State has a better roster. And Klay Thompson, now that he made the All-Star team, is running with your boy. And they've got that balance with Draymond Green playing really well. And Harrison Barnes is a solid role player. And Bogut giving them some size. If David Lee can stay healthy and be consistent. So you could argue that Steph Curry, his team might be better. But he's got more around him, so Harden has to do more. And especially when they count the number of games that Dwight Howard misses, Harden's got a decent case for MVP.
Yeah, I wonder if they kind of, I don't know, like if they drop to 6 or 7, and, you know, even though he has the stats, I don't know. I like Harden, and I think, you know, obviously we talk about LeBron, Durant, Anthony Davis. You can throw in Harden, Klay Thompson, and Steph and Westbrook being the top player. I mean, honestly, if you looked at, you know, stats, we could say your boy, Russell Westbrook, needs to be considered MVP or, you know, looked upon, if, depending on how they wind up finishing, because he's killing it, man. I mean, that 45-6-6 the other night was so impressive. And, you know, I love the way he plays the game, because he's just, it's almost reckless, but it is like a pit bull. It is like a beast mode. You know what I mean? Like, he's just nonstop. And it's almost like Kobe at a point guard or, you know, I don't know, like who you would say, but he's just, he's ridiculous to me. Westbrook is truly just a pleasure to watch. And I think, I don't want to say underrated. I don't know. Like, right now, I would take him over Chris Paul, you know? We talk about
Chris Paul. He's such an enigma, you know? It's like you cannot take your eyes off of this guy because he's so dynamic and he's so explosive. We've never seen a player at that position be that unguardable. I mean, Magic at 6'9 was unguardable, but for a different reason, because he was 6'9, you know? And a guy like, Allen Iverson was unguardable because he was just so quick. But Russell Westbrook, I don't even have words. I mean, this guy is just so unbelievable and so talented that he just teases you and frustrates you at the same time, because you say to yourself, you know, with Russell Westbrook, we should win it all. And then the problem that we both have is that he's not a pure point guard, he's a low percentage shooter. But you want Russell Westbrook on your team. I mean, unless you tell me that I could trade for, I mean, I don't even know who you would trade for Russell Westbrook. You know what
not
I mean?
I can't think of anybody right now. I mean, the only guy that, you know, when you think of the young guys, the two that I really think are sort of really on the upswing is Kyrie and Lillard. Now, I would say John Wall, but that shot is just not there. And Westbrook, sometimes you're like, no, 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 don't shoot it. And then you're like, wow, he just hit a three. You know,
right.
But it's fascinating. I think the you know, we're in the golden age by far, and we've mentioned this before, of point guards. I want to ask you something, because doesn't matter what's happening tonight, if the, you know, with the Clippers, and even if they bounce back and beat the Raptors. But I think a bigger thing about not just that game, but just overall this season with the Clippers is, one, they don't play for four quarters. Two, some people are ripping Doc for them having so many technicals. DeAndre Jordan can't make the free throws. Blake Griffin is a stat stuffer, but, you know, some people question the defense and the physicality or whatever. And then their bench, J.J. Redick, he's never staying healthy. So sometimes Crawford, sixth man, then sometimes he's starting. But like I told you, and you seem to like him a little bit, but I think they're lacking at the small forward. You know, Turkoglu and Matt Barnes is not cutting it. And I still think the Clippers, if they want a shot, and I picked them to go to the finals, but they won't get out of the first round in the West with this roster. And I'm disappointed in the Clipper team. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Very disappointed in the Clipper team for so many reasons. Because if you look at this team roster-wise, I don't know that the GM function can do any better, right? You've got Blake Griffin and Chris Paul anchoring the team. You've got pieces that on paper are great, you know, and fill in perfectly. So you've got Crawford and Redick and Barnes and DeAndre Jordan.
Spencer Hawes. Big
and Spencer
baby.
Hawes, you got some size, and you got baby with some experience from the Celtics winning, and you got a championship coach. So, from a GM perspective, what more can you give the coach? Now, granted, they're in a brutal, brutal Western Conference. So, at 33-17, they are the Toronto Raptors, basically second place in the Eastern Conference. But having said that, you are where you are, right? Your neighborhood is your neighborhood, so you just got to deal with it. And frankly, and this is almost blasphemous, and we talked about this the other day, but Chris Paul is in his 10th season. And Chris Paul has not done that much in terms of playoff performance. So as great as he is, and as great as, you know, for the last 5 years we said he's either the first or second or third best point guard in the league, Chris Paul needs to take over this game.
He's put up stats in the playoffs. He just hasn't won. You know what I mean?
But like the quarterback in football, you get a little too much credit when you win and a little too much blame when you lose. But in your 10th season, you gotta do it. You gotta get yourself to a finals. You gotta push through and get over the hump.
Because you gotta wonder.
You can't say he doesn't have the tools. You can't say he doesn't have the talent around him. This is not Patrick Ewing, you know, where his next best players are John Starks and Charles Oakley. And you know those are boys. But, you know, Chris Paul's got some talent around him. And Tony Mason, right?
It's not going to get easier in the West. It's not going to get any easier in the next year or two. The only thing that could fade off is one team, and that's
San Antonio might fade
Everybody
off
else
a little
is
bit.
Young.
Duncan.
And then you're like, hello, the Jazz, the Minnesota's, these teams are starting to slowly, you know, get better. The Pelicans. So the West is, Phoenix might even get a little bit better next year. Who knows? So this is that season where the Clippers, what if DeAndre Jordan, look, he's, what, first and second in rebounding and field goal percentage and block shots. If this guy he shoots 37 or 39% from the free throw line. If he even shot 60%, I mean, it can make such a difference for that team. It's really bad. They're hard to watch in the fourth quarter. I mean, that Blazer loss, they were up, I think, 8 or 9, and the game ended like on a 10-0 run. It was just horrible. But let me ask you this. So on the other side, in the last 10 games, it seems like the Wizards are fading. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games. Beal and Wall have hit a wall in terms of shooting. You know, Gortat and Nene and, you know, the guys, they're just – I don't know what's – you know, if it's just the cold weather in D.C. or what's going on with the team, but the Wizards are just – they, you know, lost 5 in a row. They're not playing good. And is it something to be concerned about, or do you think this Washington team can pull it together for the playoffs because of the veteran leadership?
This team hasn't been together long enough, so I do have an issue with, because Paul Pierce is, you know, got some, got some experience, but ultimately this team together doesn't really have that much experience. So I am a little bit worried. I just don't know that they're ready to be an elite team. I mean, I still look at Cleveland, of course, you know, Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago. I still think they might be better than Washington, especially when it comes down to half-court execution and what you're going to have to do in the playoffs. So I'm a little bit worried. And also their first-round matchup, I mean, if they are unlucky enough right now, they play Chicago in the first round. It's a bad matchup. I'm not sure they want Chicago because of Chicago's experience and Chicago's defense. So, you know, they're also worried about a matchup problem.
But you know what? If Chicago doesn't get healthy, this might be the year that you do want them. Noah's knee, Derrick Rose maybe mentally and like 5% physically. If they don't get healthy, Chicago could be a team that you're like, in the second round, we can beat them. You know what I mean? I don't know.
And
I think Chicago, if they're healthy, they win it all. But that's just, you know, that's how I see that. You know what, though? I'm starting to look and feel that the Hawks, that they've got something. Even though, you know, it's Millsap and Horford and Teague, maybe they're three best players. And it's, you know, I'm starting to think maybe are we seeing the Pistons? With Ben Wallace,
the 0405 Pistons,
yeah, Rip and Chauncey, you know, it very well could be, because Jeff Teague, mind you, he's balling tonight, battling against Steph Curry, but this guy, he's sort of like Mike Conley of the West. He's the Mike Conley of the East. The two of those guys, they're taking on all these great point guards, and I think Mike Conley and Jeff Teague are really making a name for themselves and climbing up the point guard chart, you know what I mean? Along with Kyle Lowry, those three. You got to watch those guys, Ray. They're like, yo, give me my respect.
Well, you know what? We have a caller right now. Maybe the caller wants to talk some NBA. Hold on. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Ray and Tay.
Yeah, look, the caller wants to talk about NBA. The caller, the caller has a question for you guys because you're NBA experts, and I need you to explain something to me.
What did Sean Buckley say? We're not experts.
Oh my God, you are. Would I waste my time talking to you if you weren't?
That's right.
On a Friday night? I mean, come on. So explain Hassan Whiteside.
You know, I don't think there is an explanation for this
How
guy.
How does this happen?
You know, that's a good question. GMs get paid a lot of money to go find these guys and to go identify them. And this guy, same thing with Matthews, right? They had to get him out of Foot Locker
for the Seahawks. You know how it happens, though? You know how it really happens? Guys get in the right system, and then sometimes – with D-League and different failures, they get a taste in their mouth where they're like, you know what? I've got to step up and play and change my life. And I think he's one of those like inspirational stories because he played with a couple different rosters, couldn't stay on. You know, he joked about his 2K basketball rating for PlayStation and Xbox. And, you know, the kid was sort of nowhere, just some size. But his athleticism, his, you know, the way that he can jump and block shots, his timing. I mean, that game where he, in 24 minutes, had 14, 13, and 12 on ABC was his coming out party. And it was amazing. And, you know, per minute, he's been one of the better big men in the Eastern Conference all season. You know, since he's been playing.
I was watching him play the other night. He actually has like a little 10, 12 foot turnaround jump shot with like touch. Now, maybe he had a lucky night. I don't know. But he's 7 feet tall and he's played, 19 games in the NBA up until this season over the course of four full years? What the hell?
It's amazing. And maybe, you know what? And sometimes, just like we blame the players, maybe you got to give the player credit. Maybe something happened off
the court, and some light bulb went on in his head, and he said, you know what, I'm the man. Because with all these scouting services and all these, you know, GMs out there that share information, a kid 7 feet, 265 doesn't go unnoticed, right? He went to Marshall, so yeah, maybe that's not a basketball school per se, but you don't go unnoticed. You're not, you know, 5'10", you know, 180, right?
Right.
So this kid,
he had some opportunity,
got a look.
Just to do anything with it.
Yeah, he got a look from all the teams. He just couldn't do it. And I know Tay watches Summer League, and
that's
he's
right.
out there in Vegas scanning,
listen,
you know, for the next Hassan Whiteside.
He was with the Kings. He bounced from the Kings. I think, what, the Bobcats for a minute? Listen, let me tell you something, though. What happens is also, and Mike, you know this, sometimes, and I said this to Seth Davis when we had him on our show, sometimes these GMs get too cute and they draft a European that they think they can stash that might be the next Dirk Nowitzki, and he never comes over here, i.e. the Knicks with Frederick Weiss, and if he comes and he gets dunked on by Vince Carter for the whole world to see. But we don't sort of give players who have played in these big conferences for 2 or 3 years, like a James Michael McAdoo, who, you know, is on the bench with the Warriors, you know, or a couple of different guys, right? Don't give them the opportunity or don't draft them. And I think sometimes it's overanalyzing and sometimes it's being too cute. So, you know, he has had a chance, but I think with this guy, he just finally saw the light just turned on. So
I actually hope he's for real and not a fluke, because I'm a sucker for stories like this. And I just, in this day and age, with just the incredible sophistication of scouting and shared information and the complete dearth of 7-footers that can actually go out there and give you quality minutes, I'm just literally blown away. Like, it's just surreal to me to watch this occurring, and I hope it's real. And I'd like to think that after, you know, 23 games this year, he's only started 8, that it's legit. That's been fun to watch.
That's awesome. Hey, Mike, question for you. So, first of all, who's your MVP in the NBA? And second of all, are you excited? Pitchers and catchers? Baseball's right around the corner?
All right, let's take that in the order that it was asked. So, MVP, for years I used to be very literal. MVP means most valuable player, blah, blah, blah. But to me, it's just who's the best player. And so, to me, it's Steph Curry.
Okay.
Dude's unreal. There's a YouTube clip from a couple of weeks ago where he I've watched it at least 15 times. I still don't fully understand what he did with the ball while he was dribbling. I'm not exaggerating. I need to slow it down because I can't even tell what he did.
It's amazing. And he's amazing with the ball.
Yeah, he stopped on a dime the other night. Who was it? Little point guard that used to play for the Mavericks. Went flying by him, Barea. It's sick. So, yeah, I know he's surrounded by a really nice roster construction, but to me, he's the best player in the league right now.
But how do you view James Harden and what he's doing? And if he keeps the Rockets in the top four without Howard and you know, not the greatest roster, we do like Montaeunis and we do like, James, you know, Dorsey and those guys, but Harden – you know, he's playing with Patrick Beverley. How do you view Harden, and where would you put him?
Oh, he's great. I mean, he's insanely efficient. He's, you know, more a, you know, dream player, right? He'll only take a three or drive, right? He'll never take an 18-footer or whatever. He's, you know, actually playing more defense this year, which is pretty noticeable. If he won the MVP, it's not like I would be like, oh, wow, he was robbed. It's like Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera. You know, I know everyone wanted Trout to win it a couple of years ago, but all right, it's like, you know, Carrera had a shit year. So if Harden won it, I think that'd be cool. If you gave it to Westbrook like you guys were advocating before, even though he's shooting 43% from the field, I wouldn't be aghast at that. But, you know, guys on teams that are 8 seed just don't win MVPs typically. So, you know, I don't see it going to him. So.
Right.
Although an 8 seed in the West this year is still going to have a pretty decent record, but not a
8 seed in the West is going to be scary, and you know, I agree, and it'll be fascinating if it's the Thunder. But I suspect they're going to sneak up to a 7 seed. But if they're 8 and they go play Golden State, that's like the worst reward ever for for a number one. Like, go
that
play
would, that.
That
would be torturous. So pitchers
but
and
that's
catchers.
What makes the West fun.
Now, pitchers
Mike,
and catchers.
Pitchers and catchers.
Mike, let me just throw this out there, Mike. We talk about pitchers and catchers. Is it crazy to say on, what's today, February 7th, that the Mets might have a better team on February 6th, a better team and a better record than the Yankees?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. ESPN.com, which, God bless ESPN, their website has been doing a series of who's better, Yankees or Mets, Giants or Dodgers, Giants or A's, Angels, Dodgers, just local, playing the same, you know, vicinity. And Schoenfeld's conclusion was the Mets are better, and you knew he was going to say that because the guy hates the Yankees. But there wasn't much in there I disagreed with. He went position by position, and everything was pretty fair, I thought, except for Cashner, where he didn't give McCann the nod based on the potential of what's his name. I can't pronounce his last name, Travis, whatever.
Darno.
Yeah, so if Harvey is healthy and, you know, he can be the ace he was and supposed to be, the Mets had the better team. They have a better rotation. They probably don't have a better bullpen, even if their lineup's a toss-up. I wouldn't be surprised.
But do you
they
trust...
They play in the same division as the best team in baseball.
Right, but do you trust Anderson and Wright, even with the help that they might be getting to move in the fences? Does that hurt the pitchers or help Granderson and Wright more?
I always hurt Wright. Every time David Wright whines about the fences, your poor staff, man. It's going to hurt them too. So over the course of a full season, I don't know, you know, if the Mets pitchers are really good at keeping the ball in the yard and they keep the ball down, and, you know, maybe the Mets brass knows that, and so it doesn't hurt them as much if they're all fly ball pitchers. You know, I don't know closely enough if they, you know, if they keep it down. Or I assume a guy like Harvey gives up his share of homers or will, because he's throwing high heat. But, you know, with an anemic offense and I guess a dominant staff, you err on the side of helping your offense and assume your pitching is good enough to compensate.
And what about the Yankees? I mean, it looks like this is a 500 team to me. I can't see them being much better than that.
No, I mean, it's
depends
look,
on
there's so many
the
hits
for the pitchers.
Yeah, that's the problem with them, all the ifs. If Tanaka's surgery was successful and he wasn't a fluke, if Sabathia can give them even 180 innings, if Nova can come back in June, if Betances is ready to be a closer, if Andrew Miller's season, you know, wasn't a bit of a fluke, if Beltran can go out there and give you three quarters of what he did 2 years ago, it's too many ifs to legitimately look at them and say, that's a playoff team. If they won 88-89 games and snuck into the wild card, I wouldn't be shocked if they finished under 500 for the first time in two decades. I wouldn't be shocked. I'm, you know, as a Yankee fan,
I just think with that aging roster of everyday players, that when you go into a season and you're relying on people who have old bodies, and we can all laugh at this, right? People in their mid-30s are considered old. And you need them to perform. So you need, you know, Ellsbury, who's in his early 30s, and Teixeira, and, you know, who knows what you'll get from A-Rod. And then you got Chase Headley, who, you know, who knows what he gives you. You know, is it not San Diego 3 years ago? Is it the first half of last year? Is it the second half of last year? So, you know, that the ifs, and then when you add to the ifs the aging bodies, I'm not excited about this year as a Yankee fan.
No, but to be honest with you, and
the pitching staff is exciting.
We're spoiled rotten.
We're the most spoiled fans in the world.
They can go into a 5-year tailspin, and I'll be pretty philosophical about it. So I'll just say this. For the first time in a really long time, I'm just legitimately curious about them. Like, I don't know. I know they're not going to win 100 games, and I know they're not going to lose 100 games. So I don't know where they're going to fall in between. So if half of these ifs come to pass, we'll see. It's possible that they have a formidable pitching staff. It's not within, you know, it's
but
within
honestly,
the realm of possibility.
But as a Yankee fan, wouldn't you like them see? Well, I would like to see them do what Gene Michael, our guy forever, Stick would really want to do, and he'd want to really, you know, build up the farm again, you know, get those young arms, get those young players like the young Pettit and the young Mariano and the Jeter, and really start to recycle, because right now, like Ray was just saying, all the aging guys on the team, you know, and we're getting less salary guys, but they're still kind of like, even bringing over Ellsbury and Hensley and McCann, they're still eight, you know, older. So it's not you know, we've done anything for the youth.
No, I agree. It would be neat. But the difference, to be fair, during Stick Michael's time, not only, you know, was George out of the way and he kind of had free reign, but the Yankees were horrible. And so anything would have gone at that point. Youth movement, signing 15 great, whatever they would have done would have been a step in the right direction, because this was their most atrocious stretch since CBS owned the team. And I think Yankee fans like myself were ready for anything. And some youth would have been great.
Although
now,
we did love Oscar Gamble. We did love Bobby Mercer and Oscar Gamble and those guys.
Mickey Rivers, Paul Blair. Yeah, we had some leftover guys from the 70s and 80s, but then
we had
the
some
90s
leftover guys. But when you think of the early 90s Yankees, like the Mel Halls and the Barfields and the Tartables, you know, they'll make me – if I start, I won't stop.
That's one of the saddest things for me, is that Don Mattingly only got to play in one playoff series, and that great series in Seattle in 95 with Griffey scoring from first on that double.
We can talk about that
forever.
Hey, listen, Mike, we got to ask you this. Before we let you go, we're going to talk some college hoops. Two things. One, how did they not run the ball to Marshawn Lynch? And two, is Jim Boeheim in Syracuse just kind of, you know, throwing it in because they don't have a good roster and he's got a great recruiting class for next season?
I'll start with Boeheim. I hope that's not true. It ran through my head when I read it, only because I'm just a skeptical kid from the Bronx. But the more I thought about it, I don't want to believe that's true. They've been pretty proactive, and so I'm going to err on the side of thinking they're doing the right thing.
Okay.
But as far as Marshawn Lynch, I'll try to give you a short answer, but I've been thinking about it all. I couldn't wait to read.
Everybody, all week.
Well, what I couldn't wait to read, I'm going to turn this into something different, unfortunately.
Right.
I couldn't wait to read websites the next day to see who was the first. And I love advanced statistics. I do. I embrace them, but they're not the be-all, end-all. I wanted to see who was the first moron that was going to tell me, oh, you know what? He actually was right to pass, and here's why. And it was Bill Barnwell semi-defended it, but then he kind of really wasn't. But it was a guy from the 5085, whatever, the little offshoot website off Grandland, 538.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a guy on there who was like, no, Pete Carroll did the right thing. So I'm like, this is the last word I'll ever read by you. I don't know. I was in shock at the time, in real time. The more I thought about it and tried to find an angle, I couldn't. It's indefensible. It's just a bad, bad call. And I'd love to know.
I was going to say the conspiracy theorists say that they wanted Russell Wilson to walk away with the MVP and kind of stroke his ego and not give it to Marshawn Lynch because they may or may not sign him, or they may or may not try to sign him for less next year.
They gave it to him on first down.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a really good tackle, by the way, away from scoring anyway. So it's not that he came out, we're just going to throw. I mean, the first play from the 5-yard line, it's a run, and Marshawn Lynch at the time is averaging, you know, 4.3 yards per carry in that game. So I don't buy into that stuff. I'm not a big
Would you sign up for the Super Bowl for next season? The rematch?
Say that again?
Would you sign up for these two teams in the rematch for next year?
Like predict they're going to be in the Super Bowl again?
Yeah, I'm not saying the prediction.
No, would you be happy if this was the match?
Enjoying it, watching it. It was such a great game to watch.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Would you sign up, you know, for that as a football fan? I mean, I would have to say.
I was desperate for the Packers to make it because they're a lot of fun for me to watch. But the next best thing was watching the Seahawks, who I just love watching them on defense. And I love Cam Chancellor, and it sucks he was playing with a torn MCL. But
Oh,
yeah, no,
let me tell you something. I really believe if those three guys are healthy and then Lane doesn't get hurt the first, you know, interception in the first quarter, I think it's a different game because they got too many yards after catch, too many yak yards, and that would have been shut down if those guys were healthy. I'm sorry.
No, I don't disagree. All right, guys.
All right.
All right, Mike, great call as always.
Yeah. All right, talk to you next time.
All right, be good. Thanks for the call.
So, Ray, honestly, this is going to be a very good weekend. As you get into college hoops and the games, when you've got a Duke Notre Dame and, you know, this might be the last shot for Florida or anybody in the SEC to upset Kentucky, what matchup are you sort of dying to see and hoping that there might even be an upset in college hoops with some of these, you know, ranked games? Is it maybe the Louisville game and to see how them and Virginia go after each other defensively? Because that's going to be fascinating to me, Patino and Tony Bennett.
Yeah, and I want to see if Louisville is a legit NCAA tournament team. I would like to see Kentucky lose so that they have a chip on their shoulder going into the tournament. I'm not sure that they will. I don't know if Florida takes them out. But I like that Louisville game. And also the Duke-Notre Dame rematch should be pretty good. The Georgetown-Villanova rematch should also be pretty good. There's some good games out there. Yeah, absolutely. And then a quiet, you know, keeper in the Big 12 might be Baylor-West Virginia.
Yes.
See what kind of tournament positioning you're talking about. Because, hey, March is right around the corner.
Well, how about my Terps at Iowa? I think that's a good game. Iowa is maybe a little underrated. This is the type of win at home that Iowa needs in terms of beating ranked opponents, you know, at the end of the season when you see six or seven teams from the Big Ten make the tournament. Well, this is one of those games right here, and it'll be interesting to see if Iowa can hold service at home where I think Maryland, you know, at 19-4, Ray, they're having a pretty darn season, pretty, you know, darn good season, first year in the Big Ten.
Can I get a Yo Terps?
Yo Terps?
Exactly.
I had to swing that at my boy, Scott Van Pelt, over at the, you know, ESPN Super Bowl coverage or whatever. He was talking to Teddy Bruschi, and I gave him a little live on the air, Yo Terps? Kind
That's
of turned
funny.
His head. I could tell, he felt it in his heart.
So, look, let's do this. We gotta finish the show strong. We've got a segment called Yo, That's My Guy, where Ray and Tay pick a guy and tell you about why he's underrated, why you should keep an eye on him, and just that's my guy. So since we're on college basketball, I'll start off first because my guy is a college basketball player. He's
all
the
right.
son of a former NBA player.
Wow.
And this kid, you got to keep your eye on him. He plays for the number 2 Ziggy Zags of Gonzaga. And his name is Domantas Sabonis, son of Arvydas Sabonis, one of our favorite players who came to the NBA 10 years too late. Oh, my God. If he got there early, he and Šarūnas Marcelionis, I mean, they really brought it over from Lithuania. But this kid is a freshman. And he only played, check this out, he only plays 22 minutes a game. And he still leads the team in rebounds, 7 rebounds a game, scoring 10 points a game. But he leads the nation in field goal percentage, shooting 71.5% from the field. So his only drawback is that he's 18 years old and he's a freshman. But he's 6'10", 270. If this kid comes back, he'll be a first-team All-American. He'll be a top 5 NBA pick, definitely if he stays 2 years. But this kid is nice. You got to keep your eye on him. He's their 6th man, but I think he's their best players, and that's with all due respect to Pangos and Weir and Karnowski. This
and this
is
their
nice.
Best team, right? This is the year of Gonzaga.
This is their best team, and if I tell you what, if this kid were a sophomore or better yet, a junior. You could think about this team potentially winning it all. Now, look, they're the number 2 team in the country. They could still win it all. But I think they'll be tripped up. But, yes, keep your eye on Domantas Sabonis.
Woo! Yo, that's your guy?
That's my guy. Yo, that's my guy.
All right.
Sabonis
is kid. Real quick about my guy. I'm going to hoops, but I'm going, you know, to to the NBA, and this team has made a run, potentially without their best player, Kemba Walker. The Charlotte Hornets, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm talking about, he's only played 34 games, 26 minutes a night, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist from Kentucky, getting you 10 points a game, 7.5. This is amazing. The kid is averaging 7 rebounds in a game. And what I'm blown away about is almost an assist and a half, a steal, and half a steal and half a block a game. But Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, he has no offense. Defensively, he's one of the best in the NBA, the small forward position. And I think he's only getting better. And this team has been winning without Kemba. And he's helped leading the way. And that is what's so impressive to me about this kid. Him and Gerald Henderson, I was going back and forth with both of them because Ray used to rip Henderson. But you know what? Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is leading this team. And right now, they are in the playoff hunt. They are, what, the 7th seed? And looking like they're going to make the playoffs, battling with them and the Heat and Brooklyn and Milwaukee for those last couple of spots. So I have to say I'm happy to see this kid from Kentucky finally start to put things together. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, yo, that's my guy right there.
All right. I like that. Number 2 pick in the draft. So we definitely want to see him develop.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
a good...
Jordan has got a bunch of guys there that, you know, they haven't, you know, sort of him and Zeller and whatever done
it
right away.
Four, maybe.
Right. They haven't done it right away, but they're slowly starting to come on, and then we'll see what happens with Noah Vonleh and P.J. Harrison and if Kemba could get back. The Charlotte Hornets, I think they're going to hang in there and make the playoffs. I thought the Pistons would, but once Jennings got hurt, that, you know, went out the window. But the Hornets will make the playoffs, and, you know, watch out for Kidd-Gilchrist, man. That small forward position, he's got to stick the best.
All right, well, great show. Great show.
Yeah.
Good caller. Excellent caller. We love that interactive nature. So give us a call. We'll be back Monday. Have a great sports weekend. Watch your college basketball. Watch your NBA basketball.
Watch
Let's talk about it on Monday.
This is a pretty good game. Knicks-Brooklyn are battling, too, for you local fans. But Hawks-Warriors, Ray, got to check it out.
Oh, for sure. We'll see you on the other side.
Definitely have a great sports weekend, and thanks for listening and talking sports with Fred.
We're out.